Bonjour. Beba Weibatung and Dishinikas. Shaganashimoin Donald L. Chosa. Zagakwantago in Iniwag Ishkonigan in Dunjaba. Onao Oshki Debajamoinug. Minwa Adzukanug. Gi Debajamoag. Ojibwe Debajamo in Iniwag. Miigwech Bizindao. Gi Debajamoad. Hello, my name is Wolves Howling All Around You, or Donald Chosa. I'm from the Boys Fort Reservation. These are some contemporary and traditional Anishinaabeg stories told by Ojibwe storytellers.
The Creator had created everything, and he sat back and watched. And then something funny was happening. None of the animals were growing in population. He thought he had set everything in motion and that it would happen. And so he looked down on his creation, he stared at it for a long time, watched it, and he would see, like a baby deer would walk away from its mom, and the mom would look for it, look all over, and couldn't find it, and the baby deer couldn't find his mom, because they had no sound. So what he did is, oh, I better fix this. So he sat down, and he called up each one of the animals. He called up Mukwa. To Mukwa, he did that grunting, that oh, 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 and the sound of his, the roar that we've heard before. And that was so the mother Mukwas could call to their babies and their babies could call back so they wouldn't lose them. And he called up each animal by each turn and he gave them a noise to make, a sound. So their babies would know where their mamas were at, and the mamas would know where their babies were at. And this took him a long time because he had to work through all of the animals. He even went and got all the birds. You know, and you'll think about the words for our birds, like deedings. That's just what he sounds like, deedings. The blue jay, you know. Gitchi gitchi ganeshi. The chickadee. That was his sound. That's the sound the Creator gave to him so the babies would know where their mamas were at. When he got all done, he thought he had covered everybody. And he's sitting there, and then he looks down and he realized Anishinaabe didn't have any sound. And he called that first being up. He looked at Anishinaabe and he said, I'm sorry. I have no more sounds to give. I gave away all the sounds already. And he goes, wait here. And he called the Moneydug together, and he said, I've made an error, a grievous error. To every animal, every bird, I gave a sound for them so their babies would know where their mamas were at, and vice versa. But I ran out of sounds to give. And I have Anishinaabe who's left. He has no sound to make. What can we do about this? And the Moneydug sat, and they smoked and talked about this for a long time in the Creator's lodge. Until the Moneydug came up with a plan. They turned to the Creator and said, this is what we'll do for Anishinaabe. We will borrow him our sound. So the Moneydug gifted Anishinaabe with their voice, their words, their sound that they make. So when you speak your language, when we speak Anishinaabe Muin, we speak the language of the Moneydug. That's the power of our language. And that's why we have to work to get it back. And that's why the kids at my school graduate at a higher rate than anybody else in the United States. Because our language is power, because it's borrowed to us by the Moneydug. So that's where our language came from. He had this story he used to tell all the time about his Wawa Banujiak that lived in his house, especially the one in particular, because, Grandpa wasn't perfect. Let's just say that. Grandpa wasn't perfect. And every once in a while, Grandma would want to go visit down by Rice Lake, go visit the Bog Indians down there. That's what they call the Bog down there, all them Bog Indians. And there's another spot over the other side of Rice Lake where the dam is. That's where the dam Indians lived, you know. And but she'd go down to the Bog Indians. Well, as soon as Grandma Elsie left, Grandpa John, he would get that itch because the cat's away, you know? So he would get out and he'd start hitchhiking to town. He'd go to the Ishkode Wigamigun. He'd go in and he'd buy specific things. He'd buy one pack of Sagaswewag, a palm malt filterless. He would buy Ingodaso, Jingababuag, Schlitz, I think is what it was at the time, his six pack of Schlitz. And he'd buy a half pint of Ishkodeabu, a whiskey. And then he'd go home and he'd sit at his table. Well, he was telling us that grandma was gone and he went to the Ishkodewabu Wigamigun, got his supplies, went back home, and he's sitting there smoking a Pall Mall filterless and cracks open his Jingababu, and he takes a little sip and he's watching and he's smoking. He hears something in the corner of the house over by where the bed was. He's looking at it and looked, and sure enough, there's a little hole there right into the wall. And looking in there, all of a sudden, out pops this Wawa Banuji. Just pops his head out right there. Little mouse. Grandpa's looking at the mouse. The mouse looking at Grandpa. Mouse comes closer. Grandpa's looking at the mouse. Mouse gets a little bit closer. And then that mouse just comes up right up close and kept staring. And Grandpa's lifting up his Jingababu. And that mouse's head was following that Jingababu around. Grandpa moving like that, that mouse would follow that. And he looked at that mouse, he said, "Gawin, gawin, Jingababu, no good for you mouses. You get sick, you can't have none." That mouse just stared and stared at him. So I guess you gotta learn the hard way. And he got up and the mouse ran off a little bit and Grandpa went over and did the one thing that men aren't supposed to do. He started digging through Grandma's sewing kit, okay? And he found that thimble. He pulled that thimble out and he took that Jingababu and look, filled it right up top. And he set it down like that on the floor and sat back and watched. Out come that mouse, and he come and he sniff all the way around that little thimble. And finally it gets over the corner, it reached down. Grandpa said he picked that thimble up with his two little paws like this. Go. And gets done, and the thimble falls down, and he said, Grandpa said that little mouse staggered all the way back over into his hole and went crawled in the wall, and all he could hear is that little mouse in there. Grandpa's laughing at that mouse, man. He's laughing. That mouse was out cold. Well, anyways, Grandpa's still imbibing, you know, and he gets down to a button. Nano Jingababuag, he's having a really good time by now. And all of a sudden he said, that mouse come out of the wall, hole in the wall, come walking on. Looked at him and he kept putting his hand up to his head. And Grandpa said, I was laughing at him. And he said, see, you got a headache. You're sick now. You shouldn't have never done that. What's the matter with you? But as soon as that was done, that mouse came over and started staring at Grandpa's Jingababu. Grandpa moving around, that mouse would follow it. Hey, didn't learn your lesson, did you? That mouse just kept staring at him. So Grandpa said, well, fills up that little thimble again, puts it back down. That mouse sniffs all the way around it, picks it up, drinks it, drops that thimble, staggers back. He's gone. All you can hear is a little mouse snoring over there. Grandpa's not thinking anything, laughing at him. He'll figure it out. So a little while later, passes on, and Grandpa's out of Jingababu, and he's starting to nip on his Ishkodeabu, his little bit of whiskey, you know. He's nipping and nipping. Out comes that mouse. He goes, hey, you learn your lesson yet? That mouse didn't say anything to him. Just come across the floor. Grandpa's lifting up his little thing, little jug. That mouse is following that jug around. Grandpa moved the jug over here. That mouse moved his head with the jug and staring at it. Wondering what it is. Grandpa said, gawin, ishko deabu, no good for you mouses. You get really sick. You can't do this. Don't even look at this. This is no good for you. That mouse wouldn't, just kept watching. So Grandpa said, hi, guess you got to learn the hard way. So he bent down and he picked up that thimble and look, 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 look. Fill it up with that Ishko Deabu. Set it down on the floor. That mouse come up, he sniff all the way around that whole little thimble. And he reaches down with his two little paws and picks that thimble up and go, 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 drink the whole thing. Then he takes that thimble in his hand and he just, bam, slams it on the floor. Grandpa is, what's going on? A mouse marched right across the living room to his little hole in there. And Grandpa said, all you could hear is little mouse dishes and little mouse cups breaking in there. And pretty soon you hear little mouse furniture and a chair slamming off the wall. And then that mouse stepped into the door of his little house, goes like this. All right, where's that damn cat at? But Winnie Boozer wasn't always about that. He wasn't always about them things. He was about teaching us, you know? And all the greatest legends of all them things, inside of them, they're hidden these little kernels of truth that help us, help me. And I can only speak for myself. Help me understand where I fit in this universe and how things are the way they are, and why it's okay to be whoever I am at that moment. There's a word in our language, I remember my aunties using it all the time. They would say, mano, you know? Because like my cousin, he went off on a bender, left his wife and his brand new baby, he was gone for like 2 weeks. And I was telling my aunties used to sit around the table, they would beat at the table and smoke cigarettes and play cribbage and, you know, normal auntie things. And they were talking about him, flipping back and forth between English and Ojibwe, talking about my cousin. I must have been about 15 at the time. And I started getting angry with him because he just run out on his family like that. And I said, I know, I think I can find him. I said, you know what, I should go over there and just knock the living hell out of him until he goes home and behaves himself. And my auntie said, Mano, says, just let it be. Because she was telling me that it's, I can't walk his trail for him. You know? I can't walk his trail for him. He has to figure that out for himself. But I should learn from what his mistakes were and not make them. Unfortunately, I'm still me and I had to make a lot of the same mistakes that he did, you know? But that was my trail. You know? And so that's the way them old people are. Just mano, let it be. And there wasn't a judgment on you. And when we use words like, negatim, for lazy, it wasn't a put down. It was just your state of being at the moment. Because you're not going to be lazy always. Unlike my other cousin who's lazy always, but it's a state of being of where you're at that moment. It's not telling what your future is. It's only a comment of how you're behaving at that moment. And I was taught not to judge a person by an incident, you know, but by everything that they did in their lives. And one incident didn't make them. So that's what I love about Winnie Boozer, because he did all these things, hundreds and hundreds of incidents, if you want to do it that way, but he still did great things. So before I close up tonight, I want to thank everybody for coming out and listening, because the truth is, without you guys here, there's no sense of me telling stories. If you guys weren't going to be here, I wouldn't have to tell the stories because I already know them. But the ability to say them and repeat them and share them gives them strength and gives them life. And it's within these stories that everything that we are as a people exists inside of them. Everything. And when I was little, you only heard these in Ojibwe. And we need to get back to a point where we can tell them only in Ojibwe and everybody understands. We need to get back to that point because that's, our language is medicine and it'll heal our souls and it'll heal our communities and it'll heal our people. We are still a great nation and forever will we be, because there are people out there making sacrifices to keep the language alive, taking them steps that are necessary to to hang on to what we have and not going quietly into that good night, but saying, no, my language, I have the right to speak it. And if you want English only, go to England. That's what we need. That's who we are. There are Ogichida and Ogichida Kwe out there that are fighting for the language every day. So speak your language. Even if you only learn one word tomorrow, learn one more word. Because you only need 1,500 to be functional in a language, which would require 5 years. If you learned one word a day, in 5 years you would be functional in Ojibwe. Because 1,500 words is enough to become functional in the language. It's pretty amazing. So don't belittle or forget the gift the Manidu gave us by allowing us to share their sound. Remember that as we go forward. Remember your legends, because it's in the legends that locks up who we are. All the stories you heard tonight are pieces of who we are. And we have a rich and storied history. And just to give you a classic example, the American government wanted to do, or the British government wanted to do some screwed up things to us. And in order for them to outright thieve things from us, our land, our furs, our everything, our souls, they had to prove that we weren't human beings. So they came up with an anthropological test. They said that for a person to be considered a human, like the rest of us, and not just some descendant of some ape or something, they have to have a rich and vibrant mythology, meaning they have to have stories that relate creation, that relate origin, that relate all them things. And so what they did is they sent out messages to all their fur traders around the area, and one of them happened to be to this guy named Henry Schoolcraft, asking him to research and find out if the Ojibwe people had a mythology, had a creation story, had origins in it. And to his credit, Henry Schoolcraft did a lot of really goof things, if you ask me, but to his credit, Henry Schoolcraft went out and wrote down the stories and said they have a rich and vibrant living history, origin, creation story, everything that goes with it, it's all right there. And it caused pause to the governments at the time. So they had to figure out a different way to steal our land, steal our timber, steal our iron, our Biwabik, steal our copper from us. But they couldn't just do it by saying we weren't human, because our stories saved us. That's how powerful our stories are. They will save us. So I think I'm preaching a little bit to the choir here, but everybody has a right and has stories inside you guys. And the only way a story lives is by telling it again and again and again, and it gives it life. So tell your grandchildren. Tell each other. Tell yourself if you have to. But give breath and life to our legends, our Adazukan, the truth about us. Give life to that, because we owe it to our little ones, our kids that are running around here. We owe it to them. If nothing else, that we can say we know who we are. The Anishinaabe. Anishinaabe Ndau. That's who I am. All right, Miigwech, thanks for listening, and I didn't mean to lecture too much at the end there. If anybody has any questions, I'll take them real quick. Ani? Oh, Miigwech.
My name is Anthony Nichols, and I'm standing before
Sean Farlander.
Sean Farlander. And Sean, where are you from?
I live in Hayward, Wisconsin right now, but I'm originally from Mille Lacs. I grew up on the Leech Lake and White Earth reservations here in Minnesota.
Okay. And you're one of the invited guests here today at the storytelling event here in Net Lake. And I was wondering, what originally got you into storytelling?
As my brother puts it,
there's a reason Sean's eyes are brown. Mostly when I was little and I'd hear the stories, my brothers and sisters, cousins, they'd fall asleep before the end. And I was still wide awake staring, trying to figure out, okay, what happened next? And that's just the way I was. The story stuck with me. They resonated with me deep down into my bones. And they made sense to me on a level that nothing else ever has come close to. And so, as with all learning, you listen first, then you talk. And so that's what I did. And I'd run around telling the stories I heard, you know, and doing the best I could with them. And as life grew, I just collected them. And then one day I was working, after I got out of home from the Gulf War, I was working with Castlelake Elementary and the emotional behavioral disordered kids. And one of the teachers asked me if I could tell stories. I went and asked my uncle, took him tobacco and a blanket, and asked him if I could tell the stories that he told me when I was little. And he said, what the hell do you think we were telling you the stories for in the first place? And that's when I started telling stories.
So. Interesting, neat. What would you say, like, what is the significance of storytelling in Anishinaabe culture?
It's everything. You're not Shinab if you don't know your legends. If you don't know your legends, you're Aduzukan. You don't know your language. All you are is a descendant of Ojibwe people. But you know your legends and you're working on your language, then you can call yourself Anishinaabe. But unless you're doing that, you're just a descendant who happens to have an enrollment card and a blood quantum high enough to get you into a federally recognized tribe. So without the legends, we are nothing. Because it's in the legend that we're taught how to behave, how to treat one another, how to respect all the gifts the Creator has given us. All them things. And without that knowledge, without that learning, without them teachings, we are a sad reflection of what we once were as great people. That's all we are. We become a sad reflection of it. So Aduzukan is, that's our word for it, the legends. Aduzukan is everything. It's smoke and mirrors too, because it's nothing too. It's just stories. So take your pick.
Yeah, I like that. That is powerful. Can anybody be a storyteller?
Do you have kids?
I have a daughter, yes, a 12-year-old daughter.
And have you ever told her anything about when I was little I did this? Or?
Oh, yeah.
You're a storyteller. The old man used to say that to me. Everybody is. Nobody is. You know, so Adam Lusher from Red Lake was one of my teachers.
I knew Adam.
Yeah, he was. Yes. I spent a lot of time with Adam, and he had a lot of legends and stories. And sometimes I'd sit there and I'd go, like, I wanted to call BS on him, but he always had another story, you know, and it was true. And they all were relative, and they all fit, and they all served a purpose. And so, but he was fond of saying that, well, if you have kids, you're already a storyteller because you're telling them stories. Even if they're not the Aduzukan, you're telling them stories about how to behave, about how to live right, about how to do them things. And so you are a storyteller. Now, when it comes to legends, wintertime legends, there's a different way of dealing with it. Like, I can't tell a story unless I have tobacco in my hand than wintertime legends, because that's the way I was taught. With them legends. But there are other stories I tell all the time. I'm a great storyteller. Like I said, there's a reason my eyes are brown. So that's kind of how it all fits together. So everybody is and nobody isn't, you know, because there's no completely 100% honest person in the world.
Yeah.
So therefore, there are always stories.
Yeah, you know, I hear you.
Depending on how you...
So each and every one of us, deep down inside, there's a storyteller there waiting to come out. We just got to find out how to get that out.
Well, find your voice.
Find your voice.
Yep, and...
Follow your heart.
That's part of it, too. And the other part is we are what we do. So therefore, we must be careful of what we do. So if you tell stories, you're a storyteller. Right? And awesome. So you look at the white culture, though. The white culture, if you're a storyteller... Unless you're doing it in the movies, that storyteller has that connotation that you're a liar, right? But if you say Aduzukan Nini, it carries a different connotation. I drove here 270 miles to get here because I was invited. Come and tell stories, and I've been treated well. They found me a hotel room. They're feeding me and taking care of my family because of hopefully what I'm going to bring. And yes. So hopefully I bring something to the table. But my uncle always taught me, he always said to me, at the end of the day, a storyteller isn't there specifically to teach. He isn't there specifically to impart a wealth of knowledge. He's there to entertain. And if you do not entertain, then you've missed your mark.
Or you won't capture the audience's attention.
Exactly. That's part of your responsibility of that, because it's in that entertainment value that the seeds of teaching are locked inside them stories. But if you entertain them and then walk out there with that story still running through their head, somewhere along the line they're going to find that little kernel, that them pieces of wisdom that our elders wove into them stories. And they'll take that with them and bring it forward. And that's the key to it, too. So, in essence, storytellers are the Bajumowin and Winnebujo wrapped together, you know. And it's always that question of, is this the truth? Is there anything in here for me? Or were they just trying to make me laugh? Or were they trying to make me sad? Or were they trying to make me happy? Or were they trying to teach me? And that's for each one of us to explain to ourselves. Two people can listen to the same story and get totally different things out of it. Not because they heard the story different or the storyteller did anything different, but because the needs of their heart led them to their own answers on it. And that's the power of a storyteller too, you know, is you lay it out there and the receptive heart takes what it needs and discards the rest or forgets about it. But hopefully if you do it well, then each and everybody gets to take a little bit something from it. And maybe they're all different, but that's okay too. Well, that's waxing a little bit too poetic and philosophical for me at times. So that's pretty close to what it was.
Yeah, I hear you. Appreciate this interview, and you're a good speaker.
Oh, me gwech.
And I can tell you're a person that's very sincere and you come from the heart. Can see that in people.
Me gwech.
So thank you, Sean, and good luck tonight. Tell some good stories, I'm sure you will.
Ahau me gwech.
Okay, ahau.
The NetLink Storytelling Project is brought to you by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. Me gwech for listening to our stories.